Hello, Claire Nichols here with another bonus episode of The Hub on Books and another instalment of our debut series where we bring you interviews with debut writers, that's authors right at the start of their publishing careers. And Sarah Lestrange, this time you've been speaking to Holly Ringland about her book, The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart.
Yes, it's a novel about dealing with the trauma of domestic violence and how women can support each other when there's no one left to turn to, and also the healing power of Australian flora, but also its limitations. Before we find out more about the book, let's find out about how this book came to be.
I'd moved to England in 2009 to do this, but by 2014 I still hadn't done it. I was still too scared. And scared of what? I can't articulate the scary monster, but I was terrified. And it was bereavement that got me over the fear. Someone in our immediate family died, and I was with them when they died, and I'd never even seen my pet dog die. So being with somebody that I love die and see how little there is between breath and no breath. And 4 weeks later, I went and sat down at my desk in Manchester, and I took the lid off my fountain pen because that's what all writers are meant
fountain pen.
I meant to, you know, have thinking. Of course. I mean, I was anything that was going to bring me luck or like make it happen. You could have sold me anything. This is what a writer needs.
Writer's snake oil.
Yes. Like bathing in it. And I had the idea in my mind that I wanted to start with a little girl, and I wanted to follow her through. And the language of flowers was in the back of my mind, and I just sat down and I took the lid off that pen, and that first line sort of just came out. It's like I watched my hand write it, and then Alice had arrived and I was obligated to her more than me.
Hmm.
And so when I couldn't show up for myself, I mean, there was a demanding 9-year-old that wasn't going to write her own story.
Wow, it sounds like she almost felt parental responsibility for the character she created there, Sarah.
I know. Looking after real children is pretty hard, but it sounds like looking after fictional children has its own burden.
Fictional characters caring for them. Oh, look, I really would love to know more about this book. What can you tell me?
Well, raised by a brutal father and a mother who's unable to protect her, Alice Hart hasn't had much instruction in her life. After a tragic accident, young Alice lands in Thornfield, which is a property that grows Australian native flowers and is also a retreat for women who have experienced domestic violence. Here, Alice discovers the language of the flowers.
The language, what, talking flowers? What exactly is that?
Not quite clear. So
right.
The language of flowers was developed in Victorian England. It was a way of communicating by sending flowers. So you might have heard rosemary stands for remembrance, but you could you could be a bit spiteful and send some flowers that actually had negative connotations as well. So you could be loving but also narky at the same time.
Whoever knew you could get like an angry flower delivery?
I know. So Holly Ringland begins our chat with a reading from the beginning of her novel. So each chapter is named after an Australian native plant because Holly has come up with a meaning for each plant, kind of like this Victorian language of flowers, and you'll find out why.
So this is chapter one. It's Black Fire Orchid, which means desire to possess. In the weatherboard house at the end of the lane, 9-year-old Alice Hart sat at her desk by the window and dreamed of ways to set her father on fire. In front of her, on the eucalyptus desk her father built, a library book lay open. It was filled with stories collected from around the world about the myths of fire. Although a northwesterly blew in from the Pacific full of breen, Alice could smell smoke, earth, and burning feathers. She read, whispering aloud, "The phoenix bird is immersed into fire, to be consumed by the flames, to burn to ashes and rise renewed, remade, reformed, the same but altogether different." Alice hovered a fingertip over an illustration of the phoenix rising. Its silver-white feathers glowed, its wings outstretched, and its head thrown back to crow. She snatched her hand away as though the licks of golden red-orange flames might singe her skin. The smell of seaweed came through her window in a fresh gust. The chimes in her mother's garden warned of the strengthening wind.
Just a flavour, a taste, or a whiff,
a yes.
scent
yeah,
of scent. Holly Ringland's debut novel, The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. Now, we meet Alice, as you say, when she's 9, living with her mother and father, but this is not a happy environment, as the first line would tell us. She wants to set her, she's thinking of ways to set her father on fire. Why is that?
I think, like many 9-year-olds, imagination informs her understanding of the world enormously. So it's not a literal imagining of fire. It's more wondering about how she could make him better, because I think 9 is an age where kids sort of are aware of problems and also are aware of their very human desire to fix them. So thinking about setting her father on fire when she's reading stories that inform her imagination are a way she imagines she might be able to save or fix her father.
Oh, a 9-year-old fixing a father doesn't sound quite fair, does it?
No, I don't think it ever is, but I think so many experience that in their lives.
And because he's violent.
Yeah, he's violent and he's troubled and he has dark moods and she's a child and she can't understand how someone can change so drastically, because there's also lots of shades of his nature that she loves. Like he built her the desk at her window and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, something terrible happens, something involving literal fire.
Yeah.
And Alice becomes an orphan. Mm. Where does she go?
So Alice is she's taken off to live with her paternal grandmother, her father's mother, who she never knew existed. Her name's June. And June takes Alice to her native Australian flower farm called Thornfield. And there Alice begins to settle, and June raises her on a language that Thornfield has developed over generations of Australian native flowers, which is a way to say the things that are too hard to speak.
Well, and this language of flowers comes from floriography, this Victorian practice.
Yeah, specifically the Victorian practice, yeah.
Where certain flowers were given a meaning and you could talk through those flowers quite literally.
Quite literally. It was a time, from my understanding and research, when socially it was easier to speak through symbolism in flowers than it was to say things face to face, because of the time that everybody was living in and the social constraints. But the thing that I found really sort of amusing and endearing about this language of flowers is that people didn't just send beautiful flowers to say beautiful things. They sent arrangements of flowers to also communicate angst, hatred, spite. So poisonous things like foxgloves would get all dressed up in these beautiful, you know, very pomp and ceremony English society bouquets, and sent to someone to sort of say sentiments like, a curse upon your house.
That's one way to do it, isn't
That's
it?
That's one way to do it, yeah.
Perhaps a nicer way to do it than to stick needles into a little doll.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it still makes me giggle.
But I guess it captures something of your novel, because there's so much that is unsaid in this book, because Alice has a lot of unanswered questions about her upbringing and why her father was the way he was, why her mother was the way she was, and why she lost them.
Yes, yeah. I think I discovered the 19th century craze of floriography that swept Europe when I was researching specifically trauma and writing fiction, which led me into voice. What happens to our voice when we go through trauma in a literal and metaphoric sense? And so often we can't even ask the most obvious questions because it's too confrontational and we're suffering too much, so it's just easier to get by and things remain silent. That's as adults. And for children, selective muteness is often a very dramatic response, but necessary response to trauma that a child's brain can't process. So when Alice stops speaking for that period when she arrives at Thornfield and the flowers become a way for her to be spoken to and to start to begin to speak until she finds her literal voice again, it all just seemed to come together quite powerfully when I was writing it to explore how silencing trauma is. And even so, our voice can never quite fully be stamped out. We will always find a way to express our stories, because I think otherwise we would just cease to be able to function.
And when you say our stories, what do you mean?
Well, I think human nature is, I think it was Maya Angelou who said the greatest burden that we carry, is the burden of an untold story inside of us. And we might not always act out our stories in the most literal or appropriate ways. We'll find maybe addictions or other people or new identities, or we'll travel, or we'll find ourselves in a place with someone we don't know who says they're our family, who teaches us flowers as a way to speak. So there's always that crack where they will start to come out.
What I really enjoyed was that you took that Victorian English language of the flowers and applied it to Australian native flora. How did you do that? I mean, how did you come up with these ideas? So Sturt Desert Pea, have courage, take heart.
Yeah. It was...
Wearing those earrings.
I am wearing those earrings. I have them tattooed on my arm. Once you do something like this, I embodied it to write it, and it I haven't really stopped. It was such an honour to create this, to be daring enough to think that I could. The books I loved as a little girl the most were Snugglepot and Cuddle Pie and Dick Ruffsy's The Rainbow Serpent. They were books that I could see the world that I lived in reflected to me through the feeling of story. And I moved to Manchester in England in 2009 to do my master's in creative writing. And it wasn't until I moved to England, the land of Enid Blyton and Lewis Carroll, and so close to Hans Christian Andersen and the Brothers Grimm, that I realised that all of those stories had been overlaid on the landscape that I grew up in that made me, which I first learned when I lived in the Northern Territory in my 20s and learned firsthand that plants had medicinal and therefore storytelling uses in Indigenous culture thousands of years before we arrived. So wherever possible in the novel, I acknowledge that and bring that to the fore, because I think that's an essential responsibility as a writer, particularly of a story like this that goes through those landscapes. And making up this language was just the greatest delight in amongst the harrowing parts of the book to write. I really was informed, the meaning of the flowers, like Sturt Desert Pea, Have Courage, Take Heart, was really informed by reading their propagation habits. So they grow.
Because they're hard to grow.
They're really hard to grow.
As I know.
as we were talking about. They're very fickle in propagation. Once they are established, they're hardy. And isn't that like courage? So when I read the propagation and the habits of all the different plants, they really informed the meanings, and I would riff off the actual dictionary of the 19th century language of flowers. Sometimes I would find really, really beautiful Australian flowers, and then they would have some name like horsefoot wart face. I'm making that up.
Or pig face.
Or pig face. Like something like that, which really broke the...
the spell.
The spell. So then I would sort of be like, oh, beautiful flower. Okay, I have to find another one.
Vanilla lily.
Vanilla lily. Yeah, absolutely.
Bit easier to riff on.
Little bit easier to sort of keep a thematic vibe going. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I guess your author picture makes you look like you've just stepped out of this novel, surrounded by native flowers, a butterfly tattoo on your arm. You identify with the story in this book.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in fiction being emotional truth. I couldn't have written this novel the way I have if it wasn't emotionally true. And I couldn't have written the characters or the story or the landscapes if I didn't have a personal understanding of what it's like to live in them or of them or love them.
But you didn't want to write it as a memoir?
Oh, dear God, no.
Well, that's clear. Care to say why?
Yeah. Ever since I was a child, my mum taught me to read when I was three, and this story has been flying around.
Good on your mum.
I know, good on your mum. National radio. Thank you, mum. And right from that age, this story has been flying around our house a lot lately because I walked out actually with Snugglepot and Cuddle Pie at three, and I said to mum, apparently with my hand on my hip, when I grow up, this is what I want to do. And so stories have, since three, they've been my safe place. They've been escapism. They've been healing and medicine. And just like for so many, I mean, we're storytelling beings. And Joan Didion said, I think we tell ourselves stories in order to live. And I just wanted to write a story that allowed me to go into fiction and write emotionally true story from that place.
We are storytelling beings. Thanks so much for bringing us that interview with Holly Ringland, Sarah, and for introducing me to my new favourite word, floriography.
Try to say that a few times, Claire.
I really like it. Holly Ringland's book is called The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. And thanks to you for listening to this bonus episode of The Hub on Books. Remember, there is a full hour of the show in your podcast feed every Tuesday, so do make sure you've subscribed. And while you're there, please do leave Sarah and I a rating and a review. It really does help other people to find the podcast. And we're just so keen to share these books and authors with as many people as possible. I'm Claire Nichols. Talk to you again on Tuesday.
Send me your flowers of your December. Save me. One.